If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
Don't try to do things better. There's always going to be better players out there than you. Do it different.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Neil Collins is the co-founder of Latitude, a regenerative-focused real estate sales and development firm that works across North America. He has a dynamic background that combines investment analysis with marketing and communications. Neil is passionate about creating an impact through the built environment so that people and planet can survive. Hey, Neil, welcome to the show.
Sam, great to be here.
Man, such a pleasure to have you on. I'm excited to learn about what you do and how you do it. Can you kind of give us kind of some background where you started in real estate, what you do now, and really where you guys are going and how you got there?
Yeah, Sam, I'd love to. So I had an international career in conservation and climate change adaptation. And I was on a road trip in the United States that I listened to a podcast. And it just hit me like, oh my God, real estate may be a way that I could earn money over here so that it can enable me to do good and more passion projects over there. And so we jumped in, we started scaling a multifamily portfolio out of Portland, Oregon. This is like early 2014. So we really caught this upswing of appreciation. And with that, you know, we're going and we're looking for off-market multifamily properties. We're doing a lot of mailings, a lot of value add stuff. We started fundraising, we started running contractors, leasing these units up. And so we started to take on more overhead. And that led to, hey, we should incorporate our own property management company. And then that started taking off. And then those clients wanted to start buying and selling. And so we incorporated a brokerage and scaled up to about 20 agents. And that really led to 2019, where we had our agents. We had several hundred properties that were residential and multifamily and commercial properties in Portland that we were managing. And I pretty much just burnt out. I realized that I hated what we were doing. It was very single bottom line focused. And my elder started getting sick and they're getting cancer and they're pretty young and healthy and all that. And I started to realize that, man, our built environment, the place that we work in and day out, caused some pretty severe health problems. And so we really shifted our company to be much more impact focused, where we do a lot of value add, but on properties that really need some help from a materials perspective, energy efficiency upgrades, just really looking at sustainability from a 360 degree perspective.
Gotcha. And so can you go back and define your background again? Because if I'm, you know, listening to this, I go, gosh, that's really cool. But my gosh, I'm overwhelmed just hearing that, like, you know, that much scale, that much, you know, that fast and having that many evolutions in your company. What was your background again?
Yeah, my background was really on the policy side and in creating the funding mechanisms for really big climate change adaptation projects.
Right.
So my world was, how do we put together a program for environmental benefit and social benefit in different emerging countries, and then get kind of oversee the players in that space. And so jumping over to real estate, it was one of these things of, hey, passive income, how do I make more money? Because the nonprofit side of the world, just they're always on this funding struggle. And so what I realized with real estate is, oh my God, here's a vehicle that not only has physicality to it, but you can lean it and you can go out and you can attract investors to say, the building is going to cost X. This is the type of financing, this is what we're going to do to it, and this is the return that we're going to give you. Instead of, we need your money and we're never going to give it back, it was, we need your money and we're going to give it back with more money.
Right. That's a lot more attractive to investors or people making donations. You know, hey, you know, give to something that you can get more money when you give. Okay, that's cool. How did you decide? I mean, obviously, you probably made some great network contacts in your previous, you know, previous positions. So somebody, obviously, you know, did you just like one day wake up and you're like, okay, we'll buy multifamily? How did you make that transition?
We started small. You know, our first place actually was a little rundown 1920s bungalow that we bought thinking that we're going to fix it up and sell it. But then an apartment developer came along and he's like, you know, this is really good zoning. And his model was really unique where he had already had a buyer in mind. So he knew exactly how much he could pay for it. So we made a really good amount of money on our first deal. And, you know, seller finance. And so we really cut our teeth quite quickly on, hey, who's out there that we don't have to go to a bank to raise money? They're either, they don't want a 1031 exchange into a new property to get more headache. And I can certainly understand that because I'm trading properties right now. And I'm like, you know what? I just want the money, but I don't want to pay the capital tax gains on that. And so we really honed in on how do we go find off-market properties with people that have an equity problem. So typically long-term property owners that they're getting to that point where they're like, you know, I'm done landlording. And if I don't want to pay Uncle Sam, then I've got to figure out how to defer my capital gains taxes. And so to somebody that is in that position, we just made it an offer. We kept making offers that they couldn't say no to of, hey, we're going to build trust. We're going to show you our track record, show you our ethos, and really try to humanize investing. And so we wrote a book about this. It's called The Savvy Seller. That was a great resource for property owners to understand, hey, from their perspective, what does it look like to finance their equity?
Right.
And so we were able to go that way before we really were able to get traction by going out to lenders in more conventional streams.
Right.
And that's just a process of, look, you've got to go out, make relationships, talk to bankers, talk to wealthy individuals, hit the private family office stuff. And really, you know, for us, we had contacts internationally, but Portland, Oregon was a new market for us. And so, you know, we didn't have a kid at that time and we could go have beers and lunches from 8 a.m. till 10 p.m. at night. And that's really what it takes.
Right. And I guess as you pursued that seller finance properties, what are some things you learned along the way that really helped, you know, kind of make those transitions more smooth?
Yeah. I mean, creating the authority. So the book, The Savvy Seller, really helped a lot. Really understanding that from an accounting perspective, this makes a lot of sense for people. From a legal perspective, there's a lot of pitfalls there that you've really got to explain. Because once you take a purchase and sale agreement to a property owner, they're like, hey, yeah, I talked to my CPA. This makes a lot of sense. I want to do it. And then the lawyer comes back with their red pen and they mark it all up. And so we really talk about, you know, what are the things that you really want to look out for? You know, if you're looking to go into acquisition mode and you want to go the seller financing route, you got to realize that there's just a myriad of ways to do it. Like control is almost better than ownership in some regards. And so you've got your lease options, your land sales contracts, your typical seller financing stuff. So, you know, you've got to be able to have the fluency so that you can create the win-win solutions of, I'm not going to just shove seller financing down somebody's throat.
Sure.
If they just need cash, like we've got miles apart, but knowing that in between there's a lot of opportunity to build rapport and figure out what do they really need and what do I have to offer?
Right. So you guys started buying multifamily. You brought, you know, use a lot of seller financing, then you brought other investors on, then you started going more traditional routes. You scaled that business up, which is awesome, including a brokerage. I mean, you guys really, really went gangbusters. Like in 4 or 5 years, that's amazing rapid growth. Did you have mentors and people like that along the way kind of coaching you through the process? Or are you just born absolutely brilliant and made it happen, which is possible?
No. You know, we probably spent 5 times as much money on our informal education in real estate than we ever did on our master's degrees.
Right. Understood.
We're still in that constant evolution of, God, I love standing on the shoulders of giants that have come before us. Anybody and everybody from like people that haven't quite hit the level of business success that we have, I still take a lot of inspiration from mentoring folks because I know that I've got so many different mentors that I rely upon to really help. And somebody said it best that it's not how, but who, you know, really got to figure out, you can't take on every single aspect of your business. You've got to go find the amazing people and create, again, more pathways for win-win relationships there. And so that's what our kind of playbook has been.
Right. No, that's awesome. Yeah. The who, not how is a great phrase. And that's been a common theme, obviously, in doing podcasting is interviewing all these people. And most of them have come along and said, you know, it's once they figured out one, who their mentors were. And then secondly, how to leverage relationships and have other people bring their skill sets to the tables when they really went to the next level. So in 2019, you guys said, all right, or you said, which I'd love to hear who we is. We haven't quite yet defined who we is. So you said that we, you know, said, hey, we're tired of this. We're burned out. We're going to move into something else. Can you walk us through what you're doing now, how that's different than what you were doing, and kind of, you know, what the future looks like for you?
Yeah, this is what I'm really passionate about now, is that in 2019, I realized I hate property management. I hate it. I sold that model for so long of like, you know, we get passive income every month because it's a recurring revenue model. But I'll tell you, it's fraught with liability. If you're going to get sued anywhere in the real estate industry, property management's going to get lumped in first because right. It's your job to manage all these assets. And they're, you know, assets break or physical property, they break and they need maintenance and there's tenants and, you know, it's a hard line in the business, and we're growing double and triple digits year over year. And we were pumping the brakes, said, look, we're not going to take on any more projects. And that's really when I said, I don't want to do this at all. So we just sold that division.
And you sold really the whole property management company.
Well, the whole thing.
Good for you.
Let's not do that. Let's not manage our own properties. Let's really just outsource. And
is that, before you go any further, I just want to clarify, does that company still manage your properties?
It does not. We're actually in the process of really figuring out where we're going from here and taking our portfolio and really trying to leverage up and scale up into different types of things that we're really doing. Because how this dev ties into a big pivot in 2019 is kind of a combination of all our elders, like my dad and my mother-in-law and my father-in-law. They're all young, you know, they're in their 60s and they got some pretty bad cancer diagnoses.
Oh, wow.
And we just were like, why on earth is this happening? So we started to do some research and talking to scientists and other in building scientists. I didn't even know that existed. And we started to learn some pretty alarming things about indoor air quality and the building materials that we have. And, you know, coming from the environmental sector, I was always really passionate about sustainability. And I always wanted to do that in our work, but I never really had the headspace to do it until you sell a company and you realize, oh my God, you know what? We have the perfect opportunity to marry in our values with our business. Because if I'm going to be working 8 to 10 hours a day, I really want to know, like, my time is going to tackle some pretty big challenges other than just passive income, vertical income for me.
Right, sure.
And that's what I really emphasize strongly for everybody that is in this business or wants to get into this business. Don't try to do things better. There's always going to be better players out there than you. Do it different. And that's a Christopher Lockhead quote, great marketing mind that just said, be different, not better. And I heard him talk and I ran with it. And so now our blue ocean strategy is to really combine sustainability, which we learned sustainability is all about how do we do things less bad? And so I was like, well, less bad, what does good look like?
Right.
And so we went in search of those answers of what is a healthy environment look like? What does sustainability look like from energy and all that other stuff? What is the community orientation of our cities and our buildings look like? And how does that interact with our local ecology? And so we started to take on agents that were really passionate. They've got these sustainable values, but they love the financial impact of real estate sales.
Sure.
COVID really enabled us to think beyond our metropolitan region to where we had an agent in Hawaii be like, I love what you're doing. No one's talking this way in Hawaii, at least. Can I join? And then somebody else in New York at the same time was like, I really, you know, can I join your company? I was like, what are you talking about? We can't do that. And I realized, you know, there's no reason that I need to own an independent brokerage anymore. I need to go with somebody that's got international exposure that I can work in a digital manner. So we joined eXp, which enabled us to take on brokers. And now I've got agents from Denver, New York, Vancouver, BC, and kind of different parts of the country and the continent. And I'm so excited. I'm pumped. Like, it's not, we haven't really gone too much in the commercial route. It's much more residential under this new iteration. Commercial is one of those that's going to be soon to follow, just because I think it's very easy on the financing side to show, hey, we're going to develop this kind of property. This is the kind of tenant base that we're going to attract, you know, probably post-COVID. And I love the fact that I'm getting out of bed every morning just really pumped about, oh my God, I get that environmental stewardship that I was doing years ago in the Maldives and India. And now I get to marry that with real estate. And it's a completely different game that we're playing.
Yeah, no, that's super cool. What does that mean? Like a broker, what are these brokers doing in the sustainable space? Like when they come to you, I guess, what value do you bring? What value do they bring? And then what does that look like when a project's complete? You said, man, we did a good job.
From the beginning, what they need to do is they have to go out and get a Living Future accredited certification. And that's put on by the Living Future or the International Living Future Institute, that they first came onto the scene around 2000 with the Living Building Challenge, which if your listeners are not familiar with it, they have to go out and see what is the Living Building Challenge. Was it takes the LEED system, which was kind of the early pioneer of green real estate. Mm-hmm. And it goes further to say, you know, what is a real estate project look like that gives back to the community, to the place? So local materials that are non-toxic, harnessing the energy from either the sun or from geothermal, you know, really how do you treat gray water and black water of like the rain that falls on our roofs? Why do we channel it off and consider it waste and sewage whenever it's actually a resource? Because that water's got to come from somewhere in our buildings. We're really setting the barrier of entry of, look, we need our agents to know what a regenerative society and cities could and should look like, so that whenever they are counseling their clients, they're able to really expertly navigate, hey, we're going to take a conventional house or a conventional property, and we're going to really analyze it from, you know, where's your energy coming from? What is going on with the materials? If you're going to be making upgrades, here's the things that you can do that's not only going to be more environmentally friendly, but it's got a payback period to it. We can run an investment analysis to show you this is going to save you money. Because for my investor brain, it's a very easy equation that we're going after. We need to increase our rent roll. So we need a unique product that tenants are attracted to. Okay, sustainability checks that box off. We need to decrease our expenses. Okay, we can figure out how to lower our operational cost. And we need to minimize our vacancy. And this is really something that I want to put on to everybody's radars, that some of these more green projects, they have waiting lists of 300 tenants deep. And so like when you're in property management, we're looking at our vacancy rate really close. Is it 3%? Is it 5%? Like what's going on?
Sure.
We never had waiting lists for conventional properties.
Right.
So if you can figure out that formula, increase rent roll, decrease expenses, and minimize vacancy, that equals more cash flow, and cash flow equals value.
Right.
So that's what we're doing right now. It's just we're going on that circle. We're pretty much the category kings in regenerative real estate. And I see it as we're not selling real estate, we're starting a movement here. And we can do it on a global scale instead of a very small regional scale.
Man, what a cool marriage of all of your past experience and, you know, your industry knowledge, not just your past experience, but also your then experience in real estate and making those two come together and saying, hey, I want to do something awesome with this. So kudos to you for launching that and having the courage to do it and finding a way to be profitable, because I think oftentimes those two, you know, people think that they are, you know, dissimilar goals, and they're not. Like clearly you're a living example. You can make money and do good at the same time. So
yeah, appreciate it.
That's fantastic. Down to the final four questions. If you had to distill everything you know and give one piece of advice to an aspiring investor, what would that one piece of advice be?
It would be think bigger, do less, and make bolder moves.
Love it. Love it. What's one thing you do to stay on top of your game?
I wake up at 5 every day get my body moving, especially where I'm at. It's cold and it's rainy. And if you are out in the elements, you're thriving. You know, it's a very different existence than waking up when your kids wake up and just kind of reacting instead of being proactive.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, I'd say your business probably checks this third box, but I'll ask it anyway, because it's one of the final four questions. What's one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
Oh, God. I think we just covered that. It's really combining our values with our business.
Right. And that's, good for you. That's a great summary. That's actually a great summary. Combining our values with our business. And I think if anybody can go home at the end of the day and say they've done that, then they'll probably go home a satisfied person. What, Neil, is the best way for our listeners to get in touch with you?
I would recommend them to go check out our website, chooselatitude.com, and follow us on Instagram. Get some daily inspiration. We're at latitude.realty, and you'll see what we're talking about. It's a great representation of...
Man, that's awesome. I'll put all your contact info, of course, in the show notes. And yeah, thanks so much for being a guest and coming on today. I've learned a lot, certainly, from you, and look forward to connecting here again in the near future.
Yeah, Sam, it was my pleasure.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.